for yourself to keep this awareness of being here, being present in your body with your breath at any moment, whether you're listening, like right now, you can stay with that quality of being present with yourself as you're listening, even as you're speaking, as you're listening to others. You can keep this awareness of here I am with you, and it will help you today as we go through a very full day. So I want to say in a moment, Sherry will introduce the day, and as for breaks, what we would like to suggest is that we're not going to take formal breaks as such, but anytime you need to use the bathroom or get a cup of tea or a glass of water, whatever it is, feel free to take a moment to leave the room and then come back. That won't be disruptive to anyone for you to do that. And it's a way for you to take care of yourself. We will have lunch at 12:30. We'll have an hour break for lunch. And there was a mismatch in Spirit Rock advertising between the website said the day would be ending at 4:30. The catalog said the day would be ending at 5. I read the catalog. So in planning the day, Sherry and I have been planning in terms of going till 5 o'clock. And if that's not possible for you, you may have to leave at 4:30. We will completely understand, and we apologize for the error. Those things do happen. You know, that's what happens. So, anything else, Sean?
If people could stay on this side of the retreat gate, there is a retreat happening up the hill. So we thank you for honoring their silence up the hill by not passing that gate. And I think we have Sherry's books here for sale. And we have flyers pointing you to the nearest deli if you didn't bring lunch.
Yeah. And any other questions or anything you need to know, you can talk to Sean or one of the volunteers or to myself. Okay. So, Sherry.
Can you hear me okay now? Yeah. So I was saying it's lovely to be here with you in this beautiful space. Anna and I have been having a good time over the last year exploring issues around becoming elders or growing old or aging, lots of different words. And so we're touching today into an immense topic, the topic of wisdom. And we're going to come into one particular view of it. And to get us started, I'd like to read something that one of my friends wrote to me in an email. As I contemplate the nature of the wisdom teachings in my life, and the wisdom teachings that are available to all of us, there are many different kinds of wisdom teachings. Grandchildren, very good source of wisdom teachings. The sacred teachings of the Dharma or the various great traditions. Wisdom tales, which we'll be working with a bit this morning. And our friends. If we listen deeply to our friends, sometimes we hear incredible wisdom. So this is something my friend Jim Thomas wrote to me following our own explorations of what it means to be getting old. And I've been contemplating this for quite a long time. Growing old entails an accumulation of experience. So just see what comes to mind for you as you feel into the accumulation of your own years of experience. You might have an image or a thought or some memories. The sense of years of experience accumulating over time. Some of us appear to be relatively untouched by that experience. In others, it ripens. Like fruit on wild trees, some is hard and bitter. Much is small, and some ripens into radiance. It is as if the question we encounter as we grow old is this: how do we allow ourselves to be shaped and transformed by our experience? How do we allow it to ripen us, if it will? This is a puzzle that I think I've lived with certainly since I was a teenager. My parents used to say, as maybe your parents did, respect your elders. And sometimes I'd think to myself, what for? My father's parents were like that wild fruit that's hard and bitter. They'd had some hard times in life, as everyone did, who went through the Great Depression. And they became very narrow-minded and bitter and hard. And when I would go and visit them from high school, their apartment was a few blocks away, they'd always be sitting on the couch watching television. And it would make me really sad to be with them. It felt like there was no space, no air in their apartment. And yet they'd be so glad to see me. I feel really guilty that I didn't want to be with them. And then there was another person whose name was Annie, who worked for my mother's father. I loved to be with Annie. She always had something to say that it felt like I needed to hear. And whenever I went to my grandfather's house, I would go into her kitchen and sit on the back steps. It was on a second story. And just hang around, because it was so good to be around Annie. I felt like I was learning things I needed to know. So maybe you too had this experience as children, having some wild fruit, hard and bitter or small, and some radiantly full. A joy to be near. In my 30s, I worked at a chronic care hospital, and I was also a Zen student. My Zen master was always saying to me, Shari, soon you die. You must wake up. Wake up! So I'm like, okay, Sansini. But there were these people that I worked with, and it was such a puzzle to me. I would say, Sansini, I don't understand this. These people have lived a very long, full life. I was thinking about this one woman in particular I was close to, And she was not just a grandmother, but a matriarch, a great-grandmother with many generations. And all she seemed to care about was what dessert was going to be that day. And I would say, Sansanin, you know, why is this? Soon she'll die. And she only cares about what dessert they're going to have today. And then one more story. In my 50s, when I was interviewing women who were spiritual exemplars around the country, I met a woman who was the head of the Wolf Clan in northern New York State named Twyla Neach. And still, I was very curious about elders, what elders are. And I said to her, well, you refer to the older people in your tribe as elders. Are they all wise? And she laughed and she went, no. And I said, well, why do you call them elders? She said, we're polite, you know. We call them elders. But we can tell the difference between the ones who are wise and the ones who aren't. Okay? So that truth that it's not just getting old that makes us wise, but what is it? How do we digest that accumulation of experiences? How do we digest, metabolize, integrate that layers and layers and accumulations of experience so that wisdom grows, so that we could become ripe? This morning, as I was sitting before I came here, I had to go upstairs and look in the little Bible that I got when I was bat mitzvah at 13, because I wanted to look up Psalm 90, which is the one that goes, 70 are the days of our years, or even by reason of strength, 80. Yet is the span of our lives one of travail and suffering. And it goes on a bit, and it ends with, teach us to number our days that we may get us a heart of wisdom. It was just like Anna was saying, the two wings of the bird, wisdom, compassion. There's a whole bird there. The heart of wisdom in the Bible, they're talking about the same thing. There are some wonderful stories of King Solomon, but who was supposed to be the wisest man in the Bible. And that when God said to him, you are the son of King David, I will give you anything. What do you want? And you maybe know, he said, give me an understanding heart. That's all I want. Whew. So the great traditions really recognize that. But in our time, we have a lot of something that we've never had before. Can you believe this? We have never had this before on the face of the earth, which is we have an opportunity in our time now to discover more about what it means to develop wisdom from our life experience. And the reason why is that we have about 30 more years of life healthy life than has ever existed on the planet before. It's described as another whole generation of life. Of course, there were old people before, but not many, very few. And as you know, if you read anything in the newspaper or hear anything these days, there are more and more and more of us. But not just more and more and more of us, healthy, relatively well-educated. And here in this room, conscious and curious. We're interested in what it's like to grow old. So we have this opportunity. It's never existed before to see. Sometimes people call this the crown of life. And what they mean is maybe there is something about growing old that gives us a chance to know what a human being can become. What is possible for us? So today, Anna and I are going to look at one aspect of the wisdom possibility, one aspect of the way to digest, integrate, metabolize, and grow wisdom. It's perspective, a wise view. How do we develop a wise view? I hope Anna is not going to kill me for this, but I have to tell Zalman Schachter's joke.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, good. Yeah. So I'm not really sure this is Zalman's joke, but he loved to tell it so much, I think of it as Zalman's joke. So this is Rabbi Zalman Schachter, and he lives in Boulder now. And he's a great patriarch in Judaism. And the way he tells the story is, someone came to him and said, "What is wisdom?" And Zalman said, "Good judgment." And the person said, "How do you get good judgment?" I see a couple of you laughing, you've already heard it. "How do you get good judgment?" And Zalman says, "Experience." And the person goes, "How do you get experience?" And Zalman goes, "Bad judgment." So that's a wisdom story. Isn't that? That's a wisdom joke. It's a wisdom joke. And jokes are wonderful, and so are jokesters and tricksters. And tricksters are among the great teachers of human beings in the wisdom stories. So maybe you know in the Sufi stories, the Mullah Nasruddin is always doing foolish, it looks like crazy foolish things. It's a great teacher. And I want to tell you a story now from another great wisdom tradition, the Native American tradition, about another trickster. This trickster in this story is every one of us in our rawest youth, our most id-like aspect of our ego. And his name is Coyote. So this is a story about Coyote and the wise old man. And we'll use it to introduce looking at perspective. I'm thinking I might be able to stand up. Let's see. Okay, how's that? You can see me a little better? Okay. coyote was walking down the road one day, thinking of nothing but food. Sorry, do you want me to move this, or can you adjust it, Richard?
You can adjust it.
Okay.
But you have to talk.
Okay, I'm going to talk. His belly was making noise like a boiling kettle, and his head hurt. He hadn't eaten for many days, and he felt so sorry for himself. He just put his head on his arm, and he was about to cry when he noticed up just around the turn of the road a bush with beautiful red berries, big, juicy clusters of berries. Coyote was so excited. He ran over the berries, and just as he was about to grab the first bunch, he remembered a conversation he'd had with the wise old man. It was one of many conversations. "Old man," Coyote said, "where did we get this land? Did our ancestors give it to us?" And the wise old man said, "Of course not, Coyote. This land belongs to the children of the future, to our great, 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 great grandchildren. We're supposed to take care of this land. We're just borrowing it from them. And to remind us of this fact, they have planted beautiful red berries right next to where the sumac grows. You must never eat these berries, Coyote, because they belong to the children of the future." Well, you know Coyote. So he's thinking, right? Thinking. He goes, "Old man, what would happen if somebody ate those berries?" And the wise old man was very wise, and he said, "I'm sorry, Coyote. If you eat those berries, your behind will fall off." So Coyote was thinking about this as his hand was just about to grab the berries, and he started to sweat. And then he started to think some more, and he thought, "I always knew that old man was a fool. He probably wanted those berries for himself, all for himself." Then he thought some more, and he said, "It doesn't make sense. Why do I owe anything to people who aren't even here yet?" And with that, you know what happened. Coyote, with both hands, took the red, beautiful, succulent, juicy berries, and he just ate them and ate them and ate them and ate them until the juice was dripping down his fur and his belly was feeling very full. And there were no more berries left on the bush. Coyote felt fine, and he looked behind him. His behind had not fallen off. He laughed, and he went skipping down the road. Well, he hadn't gotten very far before his belly started to hurt something awful. Coyote had diarrhea. First just a little bit, and then a big stream. Coyote felt terrible, sick. And he thought about the children of the future and the wise old man, and he felt embarrassed. And he walked very slowly down to the river to get a glass of water, to get a drink of water. And then he went to hide in the bushes because he didn't want anybody to know that he'd forgotten the children yet to come and that his behind had fallen off. So let's look at this story. I love these teaching stories. You know, they're so easy to remember. Like, I remember about coyotes behind falling off. And then you think about, well, what is that saying? Who is coyote? What is the vantage point in terms of wisdom? All coyote knows is his point of view in that moment, what he wants right then. And just in case we might think that this is just about an old Native American story or our personal selves, I read this the other day in Yes Magazine. It's by Van Jones, the man who was the president's advisor on green jobs, and he lost his job because Glenn Beck kind of trashed him on the radio. Anyway, but he's a brilliant man, and he has a great social conscience. And he says this: a lot of global corporations call themselves American, but they treat America the way that a foreign corporation often treats third world countries. They take, and give nothing back. Like coyote. He's young. He's really immature. And not only does he only see from his point of view and twist everything to fit into what he wants now, but he can't fathom that anybody could have another motivation. He can't imagine that the old man could have told him what he did for any reason other than the old man wanted the berries all for himself. And he cannot imagine that he owes anything to the children who are yet to come. So his view is narrow and short. And he also, as you notice, he can't, because of the narrowness of his view, have any respect for the wise old man. He only calls him old man. He doesn't know what that is. And that's just how it is. But then let's look at the wise old man. So he has a view that's, first of all, long. He has a perspective that's long. The great, 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 great grandchildren. We must keep our land safe for the ones who will come after us. And he has a view that's wide. He doesn't only see his view as a wise elder. He understands coyote, right? He goes, I'm sorry, coyote, if you eat those berries. He knows coyote's going to want those berries. He knows it, no matter what coyote says about if somebody maybe someday wanted to eat the berries. He knows he's talking about himself. And he also knows how it feels to feel hungry and I only want what I want now. And he also probably knows what it's like to be young and immature and not be able to fathom another perspective because he's wise. So we're seeing two aspects about perspective that maybe are helpful here. And one is the long view and one is the wide view. An expansion of of the self-cherishing, individualistic, I want what I want when I want it perspective that extends to our responsibility and caring and oneness with the children who will come after us, and an understanding of people who aren't like us, who see things from a different perspective. Just want to say another word about how I remember the first time I felt a perspective of somebody who was older. I was on a bus visiting my mother in Atlantic City. I guess I was in my 30s. And there were a lot of, like, teenage boys on the bus who were, like, you know, joking around and pushing each other around and really loud. And in the past, I would have been really irritated by them. And my heart just went out to them. I just saw the kid with the acne, and I saw the fat kid, and I saw the skinny kid, and I saw the short kid, and I saw how they were all vying, you know, for place and to be accepted, and the kid trying to be, you know, the strong kid. And I was really surprised. It's like, what's this? Oh, what I'd say now is that's perspective. That starts to develop as we get older, because we've been there. We know what it feels like to be one of those kids. And we're not identified with being one of those kids anymore, so we can see it, and our heart opens. It's just natural. So, but what makes our heart not be able to open? What makes our perspective hard and small and bitter, say? Well, that's a complicated question, but the shorter answer is, if we don't let ourselves be here, if we don't let ourselves feel what we feel, be interested in what it's like for us, even when it's really painful or difficult, then we close off our knowing. And compassion has no place to grow from. It's like Pandora's box. You throw all the things that you don't want and you lock them away. And the rain can't get to them. The sun, they don't get to compost and be material for real growth. It's locked away. So the same way I would say for us, that if we can be here, meaning really be present to the truth of our own experience and what it's like for us, whatever it is, wisdom will grow, compassion will grow. But if we can't bear to, if we don't have the right kind of support, if it's too much, if we learn from our parents or our environment or our culture, don't feel that, don't look there, don't be conscious about that, just, as they say in Canada, pull up your socks and move on. Or in England, keep calm and move on. So, you know, that sense of pull it together, get it together, no vulnerability. No vulnerability means I can't know how it feels to be in this kind of place, to go through this. So there's no way for the wisdom to begin to develop. So you can see that as we're talking about wisdom and we're talking about a wide view, a long view, and a caring view, we are not talking about detachment and distance. Sometimes it can seem in a spiritual practice or from an intellectual kind of point of view that if you have enough of an understanding, like a big, wide view, then you won't, you know, be all involved in feeling bad about something. You'll just be able to bypass that. So I have two stories for you about that. One is a Zen story of an old woman who was a grandmother, and her granddaughter was killed. And at the funeral, she wept. She wept and wept and wept. Someone came up to her afterward and said, "Excuse me, aren't you so-and-so, the great Zen master?" And she said, "I'm so-and-so." And he said, "Why are you crying? Don't you understand that life is a floating cloud that appears and death is a floating cloud that disappears? And there is only one thing, one real thing?" And she said, "I do." And he said, "Well, why are you crying?" And she said, "Because I'm also a grandmother." The other story is about someone who is a grandmother, great-grandmother, Joanna Macy, who is an engaged Buddhist, and probably many of you know her. She tells the story of when she was a graduate student at Cornell, and she was studying Buddhism. And she was writing a thesis on interdependent arising. And her children had given her a gift of a day with Jacques Cousteau, day or a weekend. And so she went, she thought, well, I care very much about the earth, that's a wonderful thing. And she went, and she said there was no new information. She knew everything that they were presenting at the workshop. But the accumulation of it all in one day hit her so hard, it broke her apart. She just started to weep, and she couldn't stop. And she started having powerful dreams, and the grief at what was happening to our world and the danger that our world was in was overwhelming to her. And she did what a lot of us do. She went to her teachers and her professors and said, you know, how do you live with this? And they said to her, something like what the man at the funeral said to the grandmother. How can you be so involved and so upset about this? Don't you understand the emptiness of reality? And then they had her go to a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist said, Mrs. Macy, what is the matter with you? You have a lovely husband, beautiful children, a nice house. Why are you upset about this? But she stayed with the truth of what was happening for her for a whole year. And at the end of that year, she started to create things that had never been done before by anybody in our culture. She created these things called despair and empowerment workshops in the nuclear age. People went, who would go to those? Who wants to feel despair? But in fact, we were feeling despair. We just weren't able to be in touch with it. And she provided a way for that to happen. So, caring, love, loving kindness, compassion, whatever you call it, is inextricably bound to wisdom, a wisdom perspective. And I want to say just one more thing, because that just seems so important. In order to develop a wise perspective, we need to do what Anna was talking about in our meditation. We need to take time to be here. If we don't take time, nothing can be known. Nothing can reveal itself. Nothing can unfold. Which is, I think, is part of why we hurry so much. To not feel what we feel, to not know what we know. And I had to look up Georgia O'Keeffe's famous remark, still, in a way, nobody sees a flower, really. It is so small, we haven't time. And to see takes time. Like to have a friend takes time. So that's how it is with this life we are given. It's like a flower, like a friendship, to really see what it is and let ourselves ripen takes time. Wisdom, Socrates said, begins in wonder. But we have to give ourselves time to let the wonder unfold. We have to give ourselves time to ripen. Not just to experience something, but to digest that experience, to let ourselves become ripe and wise, if we will. So we are going to support you in taking some time to explore the question of perspective. And I just want to see. I want to say a little bit about the what we could call the attitude of open-ended inquiry. We'll give you some questions that hopefully you'll find interesting and helpful for exploring your own experience about perspective and how your perspective may have changed from the time that you were young. And we're going to invite you to sit in groups of five. It's okay to have a group of four, but don't have it larger than five or the timing won't work out. And we've written the questions down so you don't have to worry about remembering them. But you can write them down if you want.
That's, we know who we're talking to.
We know who we are. We know who we're talking to. But I want to say something about, so we'll be sitting in, let's say, a circle of five. One person will have 10 minutes to explore the question. The other four people will be very present, sensing your feet and your legs, sensing your hands and your arms, really letting yourself be in your seat, in your belly, and in your heart. We're not just hearing with our ears. We're hearing with our whole being. That has a magic to it, and you'll feel that magic when you sit in the circle if your witnesses are really present. Because what it does, that quality of really being present, and especially for people really being present for you as you begin to inquire, is it brings a sense of almost like buoyancy, of support, to let you not have to know the answer and like entertain people, but to drop down deeply, to not know, and to want to know, to be interested, what is true here? You could be silent for most of those 10 minutes if you wanted to, and just feel what you're feeling. Your partner's job is to be completely present for you in whatever way you want to be there. But the magic will be, if they can really be present for you, you'll feel supported to explore and maybe find some things that surprise you, that you didn't know. So there's nobody else talks in that 10 minutes. If you say something in the first 2 minutes and you go, well, I'm done, your partners will smile and sit there for another 8 minutes. That's your 10 minutes, and really let yourself use it. You don't have to talk the whole time. Just notice, you could start with, well, right now, oh, should we demonstrate? Okay, here's the question.
Are you going to do it or me?
What would you like?
You have the mic, so.
Okay. I have the mic. So here's the question. Tell me something that's meaningful to you now that you did not value or did not value in the same way when you were young. And then there's some other questions, but I'll try to just start the inquiry as a demonstration to see something that's meaningful to me now that I didn't value or didn't value in the same way when I was young. Right now I'm feeling a little nervous because I don't know what's going to come up for me. I'm thinking about how I like to sit at the breakfast table now with Paul, and he's in his red bathrobe with his glasses hanging around his neck. And I'm looking out the window at the bird feeder, and I'm watching the birds fight with each other, fly around, and I'm happy. And I love watching the birds. Thank you, Anna. So you can see the quality of presence as Anna's sitting there as my witness. Should I turn my note?
I would just add that as the witness, probably better to keep your eyes open. I mean, we have the habit of meditating with our eyes closed, so it can be, kind of like if I'm really listening, my eyes are closed. But actually, you can listen quite sensitively with your eyes open.
Thank you. You might start with, I don't know, I'm feeling something in my heart. I don't know what it is. Feel a little nervous with all of you looking at me. You know, whatever's true, you just say whatever's true. And then you'll probably drop down a little more. And it can be something like that. And like, oh, what is that? Well, what does that mean? What am I valuing when I value that time, that ordinary time? And then there will be two more questions. Once you get into that first question, one is, how did this change come about for you, this change in perspective? And what supported it? What let you be able to change? And what got in the way? Okay. So please form into groups of five. Use the whole space.
See if they have any questions about
that. Oh, thank you. Do you have any questions? No? Oh, yeah?
What happens after the one person talks?
The next person talks.
And there'll be the same question.
And then the next person, and the next person. We'll ring a bell at the end of 10 minutes, and the next person will go. You can see why it's good to have five.
The 10 minutes will be the first
question. Only one per. No, we'll be all those three questions together. Yeah, thank you.
Does somebody ask those questions?
No, you can just read it for yourself. If you don't have your glasses or you can't read it, ask somebody to read it to you.
Let's just stay together for a minute, please.
You'll have time.
Does each person get a new different question?
No.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Just a minute.
We're not finished describing this, so please hold on.
Hold on a minute. The questions may be helpful to you that people have. So someone wanted to know, are there different questions for each person? No, there's only one question. One person has 10 full minutes, then the next person's turn, and the next, and the next. And we'll ring the bell at the end of 10 minutes, and you go on to the next person. Okay? One more question. Yes?
Can we eat our bagel while we're in the circle?
Can they eat in here?
No.
I guess that'll be a no. I'm hearing a lot of no. Yeah.
Just clarification. You have 10 minutes for three questions. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so when you give us the questions, we get all three of them at once.
You're going to get this piece of paper in your circle. The person whose turn it is will be able to read. You see, it's just an elaboration to be helpful for you. If you don't want to do the second two, you don't need to. But if you feel like, oh, I've already said something that's meaningful to me, feel kind of complete with that. Okay, how did that happen, that change in viewpoint happened for you? So you can go on if you want. You don't need to. They're just to help you.
I know for some of you this way of inquiring may be new, and it's useful to remember that this is like meditation. You don't know what is going to come up. So try not to think ahead like, oh, I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to say that, and then I'll end with the story about blah, blah. You know, maybe some of that will come, but be more fresh with it. Really let yourself be with it as you would in meditation, where you don't know what's going to come next. And you're with people who understand that. You don't have to make sense, perhaps, in the way that you normally do when you're talking to people.
It's not a social conversation. It's like Anna said, it's more like a contemplation of what's true. Okay, please find groups of five, make circles, give yourself some room so you're not right on top of other people.
It's two of us covering the room, so I think if I didn't cover them, somebody did.
Thank you, Madison.
Thank you for listening.
To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.